5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. This week, Suffolk Matters is on the road. The following show is recorded in Albany at the upstate headquarters of Suffolk AME, just steps away from the New York State Capitol Building State House. Now your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
So my guest this morning from New York State Assembly is Stacey Fafaramato. She's joining us from Queens, longtime advocate for public employees. But let's start with some of your history so we can understand what you've done in your work life and how you've progressed now to be on the Assembly and especially on some important committees that we want to talk to you about.
Thank you very much. Well, I represent the 23rd District in Queens, the southernmost district in all of New York State, the Rockaway Peninsula, beautiful oceans, Howard Beach, Ozone Park. I was elected in 2017 and had been serving some great legislation and been a member of the Government Employees Committee. And it was my great honor this year to be appointed chairperson of that committee. But before getting there, let's just talk about my own experience. I worked right out of college for the Department of Sanitation, motor vehicles operations, a non-traditional role for women. Worked there for many years as a buyer, and then went on to the sanitation department. Went on to the fire department and worked there. I later on went to the New York City Department of Education as a paraprofessional, never wanting to be in education, but always knew that public service was a place that was comfortable and it was important work. The Assembly came out of nowhere in the sense that it was never my goal.
Right.
Though my mother served for 25 years as a New York State Assemblywoman, which made us the first mother-daughter combo that's ever been elected in state history. We've had fathers, sons, brothers.
Right.
And I grew up in a public service house.
Right.
My mother always gave her time to others if it was her professional or her choice, which I was someone who definitely volunteered in my committee, active in my civic groups. But I knew I never wanted to be in public service life as an elected. I think it's hard. The Assembly runs every 2 years.
Sure.
It's just I didn't see that vision. When the opportunity came that this seat was open, it was like a calling, and people talk about that.
Sure.
But I thought about who else can serve my community the best, who could represent the neighborhood that I've grown into. My kids go to public school down the block. My husband has a small business. And I thought about community, never really thinking about the legislation. But really, when I came up here to Albany, it was a perfect match because I knew fighting for my district has a ton of public employees,
right.
Fire, police, transit, teachers, my friends.
Yeah.
So it was like a kind of a perfect match when you started listening with a different ear.
Sure.
How could you help? And here I am. I put my name in the the hat
yes.
for government employees, uh-huh. but I'm really, really excited to take on this committee like no one else.
No, I think this is going to be great. And, you know, again, I found in my time in working for government, and now, you know, as in my role as president of AME, I get to see it even in a different capacity, but there is an altruism that comes with a public servant. You know, there are many people in trades inside of government where if they worked in the private sector, they could probably earn more money, but they're in it for the reward. There's the safety and the security of government work. There's something that people are that gravitate towards, union representation or whatever else, and you're afforded that option in public service. But aside from those things, it's really about giving back to the community. And we find within our membership, a lot of these guys are volunteer firefighters on their own time. They're, you know, little league coaches. They're active in their community. They're giving back. And so that, you know, to me, that speaks to your character, right? Someone that came up as a civil servant throughout their whole life. And while being exposed to, you know, what being a legislator might mean from the home perspective, knowing through your mother, it was never really your plan or your trajectory. It was, how can I help the most amount of people? So,
yeah, I mean, my community, like yours, a lot of your membership, we were very affected by Hurricane Sandy, Irene, and I put myself right out in the community to work repairing my own, you know, repairing it, bringing it back. 78% of the Rockaways was damaged by, I should say, the 23rd Assembly District.
Sure.
By the effects of Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. I was on a committee from the former governor put together. I was working with my civic organization, work with the Volleys, you know, work with literally families mm-hmm. with paperwork, work with my building with paperwork. So that's sort of like it takes a lot of patience to deal with
sure.
government. And we talk about that in my office. Number one thing out of my office is constituent services. Sure. We serve the people. We figure out a place to go, the resources to go, and the patience to deal with the government red tape. And I really think since the pandemic, we are really tied in knots here. So one has always been about the people we represent. But to bring that to a state level, to take legislation that you could spread across the state and find that camaraderie is fantastic. And if it's through government employees, regardless if you're from, you know, Monroe, New
right.
York,
mm-hmm.
or you're from Plattsburgh, or you're in a SUNY college, it's all connected to the state, and I think you can affect people's lives
sure.
in this position.
Absolutely, no, and you know, again, your history in helping people and that motivation to help the individual and to be involved in your community. You know, we don't get to often hear outside of what people's perceptions are. They think of an elected official and they think of somebody that, you know, wants the job, but what does it mean to want the job? Well, from your perspective and from your you know, discussions with us now, it was about how do I help the most amount of people? What can I do to help the most amount of people across the state? Yes, I want to represent my district, but again, you sit on certain committees that have an impact across the state of New York, and obviously being on the assembly, you're taking certain votes that are, you know, statewide and impacting things statewide. And I find in the conversations I have with people, I find that people gravitate towards those civic-minded public servants that really are in it to help the most amount of people versus the I want to be in office because I want to be in office. And this is, you know, I mean, to some extent it's a Hollywood trope, but I think we've all met people. I'll say that I've met people that sometimes I wonder what their motivation was for running, and it certainly wasn't from my perspective, it wasn't about helping the most amount of people. So I really do appreciate you sharing your story and your perspective. But you know, just transitioning into now being the chair of government employees, that's always been a very important committee. You know, various counties, but you know, specifically within AME, we've been very concerned about that, because anything that was going to have a positive effect on our workforce was going to have to flow through that committee at some point. But I guess I would like to start, you know, you're very familiar with Peter Abate. We're very familiar with Peter Abate. He had his way and his goals. And I'd like to talk to you about, you know, what is your vision for that committee and what it can achieve?
Well, first of all, you know, Peter Abate set the standard. And for me, he actually started, I think, 6 months or 6 months after my mother, right?
Right.
So I know him for years, and I met him on a more personal level, and the stories of the assembly and the work and the nights on the budget and working on different committees and my mother. So I really always knew that taking on a committee was a lot of work. Government employees was one of the first committees that I requested to be on when I was elected in 2017, knowing what would come out of this committee and how to represent my constituency. Again, all the public service workers. So I've been on this committee since being elected, and I'm proud of the bills that we've passed. And I came on in the beginning end of the 9/11 bills, which, you know, has affected my community tremendously.
Absolutely.
In the state of New York.
Yeah, yeah.
And then through the pandemic to support the working, again, our public employees and who the frontline workers, which I have the only, it's different than the firefighters in Suffolk County, but I have 5 volunteer fire departments in New York City, the mm-hmm. only other ones other than Brooklyn. So again, those folks who wear 2 hats. And then with the opportunity after this reelection to be considered, I knew that it would be a committee that, again, not the way I wanted it with my, you know, my colleague
sure, of
going
course.
Out. But when I looked at it and thought about where I could put my mouth, mm-hmm. and I'll say that, is helping our middle class, because that's who we are, public
yes.
employees. No one's getting rich here. Right, we're not getting rich. We're rich in helping our community. We're rich in actually knowing how our tax dollars are being spent and affecting that.
Sure.
Right, and helping the working middle class to achieve a successful middle class, raise a family. You know, have like even you want to say the American dream, owning a house, sending our first generation possibly kids to college, or working in a trade. And I really felt that we could do that and just pick up that baton and go. Something I've heard a lot when I ran for office is people will say, you're filling a shoe. Well, I'm not filling Peter's shoe. I would never want to be in his shoes. I'm going to bring my own pair of shoes
right.
to the table.
Yes.
I'm only the second woman in this position. Mm-hmm. Helene Weinstein had this position in the 90s, and I think it's a different perspective that will bring, you know, with change comes opportunity, and that's
Absolutely.
Where I want to bring to it. But certainly, making strong our benefits, our legislatively, what we could do, I'm all in. And man, I already have a full agenda, so.
Yeah, and you know what? That's where I wanted to go. But before I get into some of the things that you're looking to do, there's got to be some things that you've done that you're proud of that you want to share. So is there anything?
I always love that because then I forget what I've done because you just go in a sense. But one of the first bills that I actually, when I went to Peter to talk to him about mm-hmm. how we can help folks is a lot of our public servants were not receiving unlimited sick after 9/11 illnesses. So
right.
police and fire were covered mm-hmm. Because of their collective bargaining, their pension
right.
systems is separate.
Sure.
But some of our workers, like our traffic agents yeah. or folks that are EMS
are
not in
yeah.
there. So
yeah.
my bill actually pushed to have unlimited sick for those employees with 9/11 illnesses. And some little, you know, there was different areas, like the troopers had it, but some of the non-uniform employees didn't have it. So it
right.
affected statewide. So 9/11, that was absolutely something. We re-upped the 9/11 task force
sure.
to go for another 2 years. On a really personal perspective, not for me, but from a family member, we actually did some great work with breast cancer,
right.
which affects everyone. Everyone in New York State knows someone who's affected by breast cancer, and we gave women another opportunity how they want their post-mastectomy bodies to look for. And there was not a person I've met that hasn't said that bill has affected. So it's a matter of if you wanted how you want that reconstructive to look.
Sure, yeah.
Implants mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. flat chest and... We made the legislation match that insurance will cover whatever your choice will be. So those were some key points. But I've been on every piece of legislation that Mr. Abadi put through that committee.
Absolutely.
I try to get my name on.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're where I could support it. But those are some of my highlights.
Yeah, and you know, we were very proud. We worked on a bill for, so we had a group of folks that we represent, and they handle all of the emergency calls that come in, whether it's for police or for fire, even out of the sheriff's department, is you know, the groups of dispatchers. And we wanted to, you know, I was having conversations with folks and saying, you know, when you call 911, you pick up the phone, you dial 911, that person that picks up the phone, are they a first responder? And everyone said yes. So I came up with this, you know, with this concept, but armed with the argument of, listen, don't take my word for it, right? We want them recognized as first responders. I think that, you know, the time has come for us to understand that these are first responders. Don't take my word for it. Ask anyone in your life that you want, a friend, a family member, your enemy, anyone, whatever you want to do, and just ask that question. And uniformly, it came back that way. But what we didn't do was ask for it for Suffolk County. We asked for it for all titles across the state because we understood if we were having this problem in Suffolk, everyone was going to have that. And everybody was in agreement. You know, we didn't meet groups in the emergency call system that said, no, we don't want to be recognized as first responders. They all wanted it. So it was great to be able to partner with so many people and get that stuff done. And obviously came through the committee while you were on it. It was very important for us to get that done.
I'm going to compliment you on that because one thing I feel I've learned, and I'm going to speak for you, even though you don't want me to. after 9/11, right, everyone, you know, craziest time of our lives, all the people that passed, our first responders who died that day, and then how many are dying every day
sure.
from 9/11-related
yeah.
illnesses. 20-year anniversary came. Everyone cries a tear,
mm-hmm.
but our bills can't get through.
Right.
Or people forget, right? It's over. It was 20 years. So where's everyone that was crying a tear?
Mm-hmm.
COVID came, and everyone's, oh my God, our first responders, we're banging pots, we're all over, everyone walks away. Mm-hmm. So that's the fight that we have to continue to take on, that we never forget. And it's not to compare the two, but either you're the flavor of the month, and then it moves along. So I want to support you in that, in anything that talks, that we really do classify our first responders, and we make sure we give that respect, and then legislatively make sure they're all equal. And that is something, let's say the EMS in New York City are fighting for, mm-hmm. but to be that, have that respect, to be, if it's uniform or not, but that was such a huge lift for everyone, because we don't want to forget after the crisis is over, because that 9/11 operator is still on the phone the next day.
Yes.
That volunteer firefighter is still going out the door, and then because you went back with your life. So thank you for that work, and that's where I want to just keep, but that's the support, and you have to understand that, and I think that's the perspective I could bring through, that I've lived through so many events, that we do sort of move along. And
right.
We're not going to forget you and this committee.
Universally, you know, we saw during COVID and then following COVID, this narrative change, right? It was essential workers, and we were understanding, you know what? The guy working at the gas station was saving everyone's life. If he wasn't there, there would be no way to get certain things done. The guys working in the grocery store, and I say guys, generally speaking, not male, female, just generally because... I don't know, I'm a New York guy. You know, nursing, we saw that, custodial, all of this stuff. And then out of nowhere, we get through the crisis. Everybody recognized what essential looked like. We all understood what essential looked like. And the narrative starts to change inside of the labor community, and not like organized labor, but, you know, more from the employer standpoint of unskilled labor now. Right, these are not essential employees anymore. We need to change the narrative back to unskilled labor, because we want to suppress wages. And, you know, again, this is me getting on my soapbox. Why don't we go on to, so I have some legislative priorities that are important to us, but I know that you certainly have some, and I know there's going to be overlap. So
it's
I want to hear
good stuff. We've got to
do good
stuff here.
I know,
but I appreciate that distinction, or going back. And again, that's I'm sure your membership appreciates you. But that's where we have to keep that conversation going, because we flip so quickly because everyone went back to work. And it's like, oh, it's over.
Right.
Well, no, you just praised everyone and then you just dropped them like a hot potato.
Right.
So that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
Just we're
agree.
On that same page. But
I agree.
We do have legislation, and it is straightening out or finding errors that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Where things happen during moments that we say, wow, we didn't know there was a loophole in the bill.
Right.
We didn't know that area didn't meet the standard. So how do we fix that so it's fair for everyone and make sure our union workers are protected? And that's our job.
Yeah. So what priorities do you think you have, you know, in terms of legislation that you're really looking at, specifically in government employees? The aspects of legislation that are important to you that you're looking to kind of...
So I'm a real honest cookie there, because I think that my predecessor did great work and work with if it's your group or if it's state correction officers, different ways. So I didn't create the wheel. I took some of his work, again, as I said before, took that baton and kept running. So brought some of them back up. But the number one thing I've been hearing since taking the chair has been recruitment and retention. Right, we can't get anybody to work in public service. You know, years ago, you used to give a wink and an eye, have an uncle, and now there's openings, right?
Right.
And then the other side, people are running out the door, and it was COVID was a crisis. If we didn't appreciate you, overtime, mental health, people worked hours on end, and it's time to go. But we need you.
Right.
We need that historical knowledge. We need you. You're a senior member. How do we retain you? And that's sort of the balance.
Sure.
But tier six is the number one. 50% of the state employees are tier six now.
Right.
And that's something we have to address, because that tier, done way before I got in, I guess it's about 10 years now, a little over 10 years, and it's a hot mess. I mean, even looking at it, and it's not equal. I could say from my own team, people I meet, all, you know, every position, everyone doesn't realize that they are all in the same boat together. So how do we fix that to keep either the next group coming in, or just keep that flow going so we don't have that? So I definitely have some issues that I some areas I put in to keep 3% flat again for contribution.
Sure. Yep.
I put that bill in so that we could just go back to where that was. I actually this afternoon was approached by someone who said they're paying big money in their paycheck because they're at the 5-6% level, and seeing the change from, you know, because they're within 10 years.
Sure.
I also want to change the 3-year final average salary. I think that's an important change that will help level the playing field, and it's the basic and the final average salary, which I think now is 35%, and bringing it back to 40%.
Right.
Because again, that's what all the public employees sectors have been saying to me throughout the state that they feel that some of those would be, again, recruitment and retention of their people. And I think that reasonable. Now, the one thing I learned very quickly in my own committee is we're the king of the vetoes, or queen, I should say, and we cost a lot of money. So it's a matter of working those conversations, really not always through the One House, but maybe through the budget, because the governor has vetoed some bills. She talked about fiscal. They should be part of the fiscal conversation, and that's where we are now for the next week or so. We're going to be in that or more. Hopefully, we'll have an on-time budget. If not, where can we bring those conversations? But I think that it's the number one roar coming out of our sectors, and they're seeing it. You know, look, let's all know what's the elephant in the room, inflation.
Sure.
Everything is really expensive. And if our families could save money in that contribution from going from 6%, you know, 5-4 back down to 3, those couple of shekels every paycheck
makes a difference.
It's probably a dozen eggs. We all keep talking about eggs. But there's a perfect example.
No, it adds up. And, you know, just for our listeners, so within the retirement system, there are various tiers. And if you started many, many, many years ago, you were tier one. Then they created this new class, which was tier two. And we've worked our way through. And now, you know, as you say, you know, more than half of the workforce is between tiers five and six. And tiers five and six are a lot more punitive towards public employees than, say, tiers four and earlier were. And it's getting to the point where, you know, public service used to be a job you sought after. You know, you needed to have a certain character and a certain acumen and a way about you. But on top of that, it was a great place where you would have stable income and you would have retirement security and you would have health benefits and whatever else. But over time, these protections keep whittling down, whittling down, whittling down. So now we're at a point where you invest, you the taxpayer, invest in a public employee, you bring them in, you train them, they gain some knowledge and some experience, and the first chance they get, they run out of government and they go somewhere else to actually earn money. The public employee is a great value for folks in the public. The taxpayer really gets a good deal by a public employee, but it's not a good deal for a public employee anymore. And it's getting to the point, and we're seeing certain trades where you wouldn't think this would happen, you know, even law enforcement, you know. Out in Suffolk County, some of the deputy sheriffs, and they're coming on the job, and within 2-3 years, they're leaving the job as a deputy sheriff, which is well compensated. It's got, you know, they've got good work rules. It's a decent job to have if you're in law enforcement. They're not staying. And that obviously trickles its way all the way down to the guys on the side of the road, you know, cutting the grass, doing brickwork or whatever else. Throughout all these titles, you know, inside of AME, we've got 10,000 members between the actives and the retirees, 900 plus job titles. And across the board, we're seeing recruitment and retention issues. And some of it is just basic pay discrepancies that need to, you know, come, you know, match with the times. And that's, you know, part of my job, working with the county and the powers that be and the legislature to make sure that we get certain rules in place and certain adjustments to the budget so that salaries make sense and you're actually bringing in qualified people that want to stay. But when you look at, you know, the potential loss of health care in retirement, you know, that's this ruling that came out in Manhattan, you know, we've now gotten language put in place in Suffolk County that protects our employees in retirement. But other people may not end up with that same win, right? And then on top of that, to know that you're going to have a pension that's greatly reduced from your coworkers, the people that you're working next to day in and day out, doing exactly as much work and putting as much effort into the machine, quote unquote, as they are. But because you took the job a little bit later than they did, you are now going to have a harder time in retirement. And these issues, you know, they're complex, right? We're not just talking about let's flip a switch and magically everybody has all of these changes. There's going to be a fiscal impact. And, you know, we've talked to the comptroller's office before and they say, well, you know, retirees want an adjustment to their cost of living.
Right.
You guys want a lower contribution rate. The counties themselves, the localities, they want to pay less into the retirement system. And if we satisfy all of these things, we'll be defunded. So how do you find that balance? And that's the complication in the work that you do. We have these good ideas that we put forward. We have these good discussions. And then the work of the assembly, the Senate, the executive branch sometimes all mills together to try and solve the grander problem.
No, it's complicated, and that's, you know, but I have to say I'm going to come to the table with the appreciation of the public employee, because it was sure. always about public protection as your job. A union would protect that job, but now the salary benefits, and it's complicated. But think, I always think about this, and you said you work for Public Works. You know, a seasoned employee working a salt spreader, because mm-hmm. I worked on that, mm-hmm. knows how to work that machine, which is thousands of dollars of your taxpayer money,
oh, yeah.
chains and all and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Newer folks and inexperienced workers are going to ruin those equipment. You need seasoned employees. So
sure.
therefore, you have to pay more. It might be more for an executive. It might be more for overtime. But we have to find a balance. So the same thing goes into equipment. Because if we're just burning our engines and we're not, you know,
right.
we're not training, we need to have that next layer. And so that our, just like any other organization, our senior employee deserves a senior salary. So, because you're bringing that experience to the game. And that's, you know, sort of what we need to talk about. And that's, you know,
sure.
that's keeping the retention. But it also goes with the actual physical dollars that you're spending mm-hmm. in your counties for that equipment or the heating in a school system.
Yep.
Bring a new guy in, he's going to blow your boil system.
Huh?
And so it's that calm, it's that, it is totally a balance, but it's very complicated. And I have so much respect that you understand that. And we have to bring that back to our constituency to understand
yes.
that we can't get it all,
mm-hmm.
but we are going to work certainly to get better benefit, you know, some.
Yeah.
Some of that back
yeah.
because it needs to be.
We've also seen the effect of austerity, right? So that concept of, well, there's not enough money to go around, so we're going to cut back on certain things for a while, and then when there's more money, then we'll, you know, start doing those things again. And what we saw inside of local governments, I don't know if the state necessarily did this as much, and I just wasn't following it, but there was a cutback on maintenance, right? And as we cut back on maintenance, certain things failed to the point where you couldn't maintain them anymore. And so now you have equipment or structures, buildings themselves, that are no longer viable. And yes, you saved because you had a little less, you know, mechanical staff and custodial staff and whatever else. And you saved a little bit of money in the short term and cost much more money in the long term because now those things need to be reacquired or
yep.
rebuilt. And that's usually bonded money, which means debt service, right? So it's like buying something on your credit card knowing that you can't pay it off. So you're going to pay that interest rate, right? I mean,
this is what we said we could do to public servants because I
yes.
work in motor vehicles. So
yeah.
preventive maintenance was our key and bringing equipment in on time. And that's the first thing that gets cut, right? It's everyone thinks that as public servants, I think that we're just spending. And I think we're the most frugal, and we always look at what we're spending and
sure.
that cost, but definitely cutting back on equipment or even on people, right? Because we stress people out. What's happening right now with the shortage of employees
mm-hmm.
is three people are handing a 911, you know, call center, and it used to be six.
Right.
So that person's getting overtime, they're getting mandatory overtime, and they're stressed out.
And they're burning out.
Right, so
right.
we're never going to keep our people and that history. So there has to be a delicate balance, and that's what we're both going to come to the table and bring and solve. But it's a very interesting concept, public employees, because I do think the nature, I would say 95% come in with the best intention mm-hmm. to do the best job because it is for their county and their state.
Yeah, and it's their reputation.
Yep.
You know, their neighbors know that they're a public employee, so anything that happens anywhere in government, they're going to hear about it, and they take pride in what they do. So, you know, you raise an interesting point as another legislative priority of ours, but, you know, we talk about the morale of the workforce, retention, right? We talked about recruitment and having some better options on the way in the door would recruit better people.
Yep.
Retention is also a component of that is going to be morale. And one of the things we see killing morale is, again, that lack of staff. So we need to get people in. We need to keep them on because if it takes 20 people to do the job, there's only 10 people, and these 10 people are altruistic, and as we discussed, their reputation is on the line with their friends and their family and their neighbors and everything else. So they're going to do everything in their power to get the job done, and they will burn out. That works amazing at, you know, a business model like Amazon. They are designed to burn people out. They want to use them up, burn them out, and send them on their way. They're built that
yep.
way, and I have tons of opinions on that, but that's not what I'm talking about. In government, you want to bring somebody on. You want to keep them for 30 years. You want them to be on the job. You want them to be invested and you know where the light switch is, know exactly how to operate the machine, know what kind of mood the boss might be in on Tuesdays or whatever. It's these things that just get built into the cake. When we talk about retention, we talk about morale. For us, it's staffing. And one of the things that we look at and we've really been prioritizing is safe staffing levels, you know, especially in areas where you're dealing with populations that can't look after themselves, right? CPS comes to mind. We talk about adult protective services. There's various parts of our community where the only voice these people are going to have is through government representatives, and we should be ensuring that in revenue-generating departments or areas where no one can defend themselves outside of the government, that we should have safe staffing levels.
No, I agree with that. We voted that for nursing.
But sure.
Again, that goes to pay also, because everyone will say, oh, I would never be a caseworker. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe mm-hmm. that you have to go to that house. Or mm-hmm. So don't you think we should pay folks a little bit more?
Yes.
Like, you know,
yes.
Because I don't want that job. So it takes a certain type of person who can handle the pressure, and mm-hmm. then the work is stressful. So if you need more social workers, like we've been talking about that across the board,
sure.
Like let's hire them, let's get them on board. But yeah. It's amazing what burnout. So, you know, when I'm not in this hat of being the elected, and I'm trying to be elected, mm-hmm. and you're outside, and I love knocking on doors and meeting my constituency. And I had an hour long, if not more, with a correction officer mm-hmm. working in Rikers Island
sure.
that was telling me about the forced overtime that's more than the NYPD has to have.
Mm-hmm.
And not only about the work stress out that you are, it was actually about the amount of family events that she missed.
Right.
And about that there's another birthday party mm-hmm. and that she couldn't wrap her brain around that I'm going to miss another uncle's birthday party.
Right.
And I felt for her and I said, you're right. I mean, I didn't know what else to say because when is enough and how do we help her get to balancing that? Because she wanted to stay. She likes what she was doing, the correction.
Yes.
She actually liked her work. She felt she was making a difference working with the folks in there. I'm going to say the right, wrong word, and incarcerated individuals.
Right.
But she could no longer sacrifice her family life. So how do we bring that back? You couldn't pay her more. It's getting more recruitment. So they go to our
it.
Recruitment.
That's
and
it.
Saying that this is a great place to have a good life and you do make a good salary because it's built in overtime. And you realize this is the salary and talking it up. And we actually went back and followed up with her just to talk about it, that I actually met the union president and
yeah.
we were talking about this. But those jobs were getting 3,000 people for an exam. They're getting 950 only hiring 350. So again,
listen,
so we
Benny,
have to put
Benny's
some, I hate
got
the word
work.
Sweeteners, but there has to be
yeah.
something to help people recruit now. This is where people are needed in the public service sector, and we have to look at these tier six fixes mm-hmm. and at the end, because I love historical knowledge. I love the person who's going to tell me, you know, we have a joke now in the Capitol that the escalator is broken, and the person who probably fixed the escalator retired and never told everybody else how to fix the escalator.
How to fix the escalator, yeah.
But we need historical knowledge. You have to take that next generation and help. I always talk about how the mentors helped me do deferred compensation.
Mm-hmm.
I bought bonds with my paycheck. Like the older folks in the job told me how to be the best public sector employee I could be through my own investment as one, and then how to get, you know, recruitment, the next job, the next level, how to apply. Like, that's a great bond. And I still talk to everyone from my first job and every level of government. It's like an inner family for me. And I think that's the other side of it, that you really build a great family when you are working in the, if it's county level, city, you know, city or statewide.
State.
You
yeah,
just
yeah.
do build a great bond with your colleagues and stuff like that. So it's a good working environment.
It's very true. And we need to create those opportunities for people to get them to
yep.
come in and get them to stay.
Yep.
I really want to thank you for joining me this morning. I appreciate you. I know, like I say, you have a very busy schedule, a lot of responsibility, but you've always made yourself available to hear about our issues. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you carving out the time to meet with us this morning. So our guest was Stacey Pfeffer Amato. She's Assemblywoman at the 23rd District. That's in Queens. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.